Fades out. How's everybody doing today? This is the Inkstead Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. I am joined by my special co-host, Robin Consabaris, and I'm going to bring our guest, Ellen Forney, on the air. Do we have you there, Ellen?
Yes, you do. Hello.
Hello. Did I pronounce your last name properly?
Forney, yeah.
Forney. Okay. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. I had a long morning.
Ah.
But I teach comics at Cornish College of the Arts here in Seattle, and it was the advanced class this morning, and it was popping and perky. So
nice. All my classes at school are the most sedate things. So the professor will talk for an hour. Anyone have any questions? And it's like, you know, the sound of grasshoppers.
Crickets. Yeah.
But I like my schooling. I like going to school and stuff. So teaching comics. I'm gonna ask. What entails a comic class?
I teach intro comics and advanced comics, and it's actually been really cool, to kind of, to use academic speak, to construct and deconstruct comics. Just basically, there's a lot of, it's largely a studio class. It's not like I'm not teaching about the history of comics for the most part. I mean, of course, it comes up a lot, but starting out with the building blocks of creating comics, there's a lot of writing. That's something that a lot of art students do a whole lot of. learning I guess, iconic language, so using visuals specifically as a storytelling device, and then just sort of like weaving them together in a lot of different ways.
That's odd, because a lot of cartoonists get into it because they have a love of writing and of imagery, and they want to put the two together.
So, actually, do you know what? A lot of people get into comics because they love to draw.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, a lot of cartoonists come at it, I mean, myself included, come at comics from an art angle. Like, you know, like we've drawn since we were little, from in my experience anyway, not as much experience writing. That was one of the first criticisms that I got from, I still remember this very clearly, from Kim Thompson, one of the Fantagraphics.
Honchos?
Huh?
One of the honchos,
yes. And of course, at the time, I was indignant, but at the same time, I knew that it was true, that basically I was hanging... I was basically coming up with just the shakiest skeleton of a story so that I could hang my illustrations all over it, hang my artwork all over it, and that I needed to think more about what I wanted to say and how I wanted to say it. And
now,
so I've worked on my writing a lot over the years.
I think that really shows, because like you have like super strong narrative in your comics and very interesting subject matter.
Thank you.
Now, was this for your first... Actually, I'll also let people know that the book that we'll be talking a bunch about is your main staple, I guess, the I Love Led Zeppelin.
I Love Led Zeppelin. Hence, the Traveling Rivers.
The song request, the Led Zeppelin, very aptly chosen. But you had another book for Fantagraphics, which I haven't actually seen. I guess that was a number of years ago. Was it from Fantagraphics that it originally came out from?
Yes. And that's Monkey Food, I'm assuming that's what you're referring to.
Yes, but I haven't actually...
since that's my only other book. it's a collection of... I used to do this weekly comic called I Was 7 in 75. Because I was 7 in 75. And it's about growing up in the 70s in my kind of offbeat family. My pot-smoking parents and going to nudist camp and that kind of thing. And so that was my first book, and that came out in 1999. My first collection. I mean, I've done a lot more comics than my two books would reflect. But
well, you have a weekly in The Stranger, the Lust Lab. Was that?
Yes, Lust Lab out of the week. Let me talk about that a little.
We'll talk about everything.
Well, that one is, I've been doing this for a couple of years, and I love this project. I feel like this assignment was, like, tailor-made for me. I take one of the kinky personal ads in The Stranger, that's the alternative news weekly here in Seattle, and I adapt it into a one-panel, and I'm going to put comic in quotes, because... it kind of depends on what your definition of a comic is, and blah, you know, I don't know. Like, I could go on about what it might be called. Stumbled over that any number of times. But I edit down the text to, like, you know, a pithy sentence or three, and then incorporate that with some sort of image. And sometimes it's sort of like wacky packs, kind of like I make a fake product, or maybe I use, like, some old erotic photography for inspiration, or like a model, or it's really fun, because I try to come at it differently from a different angle. It's, you know, it's goofy and funny, or it's you know, like kind of hardcore and you know, heavy or each week. And that's going to be collected into a book, too, called Lust.
And how long have you been doing that for? That was
a couple years now.
So that's probably like a good 100 things that if it's weekly.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
So it's going to be a little book dimensions wise, because each comic is only 3.5 inches high by 2.8 inches wide.
Business card size.
Huh?
Business card size.
Card size?
Business card size. Business card.
Oh.
You know, like a little calling card.
What? it's a little bigger. Not much. So it's going to be a little book. It's going to be a cute little book. And but yeah, relatively meaty. And I'm going to do some interviews of people who have used Lust Lab for the beginning, so that there will be a little more to read and to really kind of hold on to.
A pocketbook of lust.
Yeah. Who's to argue?
Is there any ones that you really loved of it? And don't worry about being too. I don't know. We're airing in Canada, so we don't have as many FCC laws as America.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, don't worry about being too self-congratulatory.
That as well.
About being too self-congratulatory?
Yeah. Don't worry about, don't be shy.
Well, do I have any favorites? Do you know, really? I have a lot of favorites. I know that's kind of dodging the question a bit, but I work really, really hard on them. I just love them. I don't know, you can probably tell from I Love Led Zeppelin, a lot of my work is very, I guess the term generally is sex positive, mm-hmm. and it kind of deals with kink and porn
and rock and roll.
Gender
and
bending.
Yeah. And actually, there's a lot of drugs in.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. I love saying it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll because it's actually accurate. It's true. There's sex, drugs, and rock and roll in there.
Which oddly is something that's sadly missing from a lot of comics for some reason.
Indeed.
Comics people tend to not really rock out very much.
And it's odd because sex, drugs, and rock and roll never lose their appeal. You know? They just, everybody loves them. You get older, you still love them.
Yeah. It's an easy sell, really. It sells itself, really.
So for I Love Led Zeppelin, let's go through the book. It's a great collection. One of my favorite picks of last year. Now, it's the neat thing is it's quite a array of kind of your body of work, because you've got the early stuff, 92 to 94, and then the more modern stuff. And it's definitely a neat development in art styles. How do you develop that thick black line that you got? I'm kind of curious about your inking style, like.
Yeah, I actually commented that your lettering looks a lot like it's influenced by Michael Dugan.
Oh.
Yeah. Just the lettering.
Did you read that somewhere? Or did you pick up on that yourself?
No, I instantly, as soon as I opened it, I was like, wow, this lettering looks like Michael Dugan's.
That's amazing. No, you are absolutely, absolutely dead on correct. When I was first starting considering being a cartoonist, this is when I was in my early 20s, I was living in Philadelphia at the time, and I flew to Seattle because I kind of figured out that it was something of a mecca for cartoonists.
It is.
Just like kind of San Francisco used to be, or to a degree still. Well, in any case, I came and I talked to a bunch of different cartoonists who were already sort of my heroes, and Pete Bagg and Jim Woodring and Roberta Gregory, and Michael Dugan was someone I was a big fan of his work. And I, you know, talked to all of them about what it was that they do, and then showed them just. I mean, at that point, I have very few comics and my sketchbooks. You could kind of tell. I think, like, I was using a pen, and just trying to get the lines bolder. You could tell it wasn't quite getting at what I wanted. And Dugan said, use a brush. And actually, mm-hmm. I have the book that he gave me right here. I think this is the one that he wrote this in. He says, here you go. The brush is mightier than the pen. Michael Dugan. And I bought a brush and I never took to anything like the brush. Because when I first tried it, I just like fell so in love with it. I thought, you know, and I was really at that point where I'm like experimenting and excited. And I think I was like, I was so enthusiastic, I think, that people were just kind of like, whoa. and I remember deciding that I was going to try everything that I could possibly use that would reproduce in black and white. And that's why, like, the my date with Camille Paglia story.
This is actually the one I have it open to right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, so that's pen and ink, and that's the only one in there that's pen and ink.
Now, I was wondering why the style looked so different than the rest of the book. That explains it.
It's because I decided to see if I took to that too. Like if I just tried this and loved it so much, who knows what else I'll just try and love. But I really kind of fought with the pen the whole time I did that story. It didn't fit in my hand and just go, you know, I didn't just go, you know, like, ah, I love this. This is, it's going to pour out my fingers. It didn't anything with anything else. And I didn't get through all of the different, I tried scratchboard and none of my scratchboard stuff made it into I Love Led Zeppelin. I don't think it. I didn't really like how it came out, but I didn't get. I didn't get so far as what I thought I was going to give a try, which was string art, like gluing black yarn onto white paper. I was seriously going to do that. And but before I got to that point, I decided, you know what? I think the brush is for me. I'll
yeah.
out there.
What if I had turned into an artist that only used string?
a yarn artist.
A yarner.
Telling your yarns with yarn.
Oh.
That's terrible. You know what? Actually, I found somebody wrote to me that they were really glad. You know, like I said in the I Was 7 and 75. My family. One of the stories is about my family going to a nudist camp, and I guess there aren't that many stories or comics about nudist camps or nudism. Because I got an email from someone who was really appreciative that it existed, and there was a review in this was a while ago. I don't even remember if it was online. I guess it was online, and it was the magazine, online magazine, was called Yarns Without Threads. For what it's worth, there you go.
Your early inspiration. you know, as well as like having just a really great and somewhat varied like artistic approaches in the book, I really like your whole what I call like edgy comics that you have, I guess, that you were doing in the 90s, where they're all how to be a successful call girl and how to talk to your kids about drugs, and a lot of them are really edgy. Were you doing those for like newspapers and things?
Yeah, almost all of the how-tos were for either The Stranger or the LA Weekly.
Must have been really fun, like, talking to all the people that you got the information from, because they're all, like, really well-researched.
You know, it was... I loved doing that series, and I still do those from time. Like, it's become enough of my thing that every now and then I'll do a how-to. I think part of it, I mean, the whole idea of doing how-tos. I mean, like, I love being a teacher. I was just talking about teaching, and there's something about sharing what you learn that I think is what it's sort of an honor to be able to do that, I think. And also to I try to make my how-tos actually useful for people. Sometimes they're just interesting, like an interesting thing to learn, like how to sew an amputated finger back on. And I talked with a hand surgeon. Like, I loved doing that research. Like, I was interested in all of the questions. I was interested in finding somebody who was really knowledgeable about it. I really enjoy talking with people. So, you know, and I love learning. And, you know, like, in order to explain something, you have to really know what you're talking about, so that you can boil it down to the important points and explain it well. I mean, so much of comics is editing and making things really succinct, mm-hmm. and, you know, concise, and explaining things very clearly. This is a really good example of that. I mean, and you're relating something very specific. It's not just the story, but very specific points. And it was really fun to be able to choose how-tos that were, off the beaten path.
It must have been quite interesting also for the people you're interviewing to kind of see, like, this result, like the amputated finger one, referencing that one. It's quite neat. Like, it seems like the doctor probably had fun, like, going, okay, so if you cut off the finger this way, then this is how you're going to have to sew it.
Right.
And the odds of it being a success. I was wondering if any of the how-tos, if any of the people you interviewed ever then used the comic as educational material for their clients or patients, you know?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes. Let's see. The How to Smoke Pot and Stay Out of Jail.
Very, very useful.
For one thing.
Especially in America.
But... Huh?
Especially in America, we don't have it's
well, yeah, I mean, it, yeah, specifically a about concern, a lot of it is about dealing with the cops, dealing with the law, and what your rights are and what the best way to be. I mean, the first half of it is about being discreet, and the second half is about what your rights are and how to deal with a confrontation with the police in a way that, you know, it isn't just antagonistic, but actually is, I don't know.
Well, self-protective.
It's self-preserving, but it's, you know, things like be polite. Say, sir and ma'am and yes, officer. And, you know, like don't, you know, like, keep yourself calm and, you know, like, you don't have to submit to search or entry. And you know, so, like, knowing what your rights are and then also being able to calmly present them. So... Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that the lawyer that I interviewed is also on the board of NORML, NORML. It's the National Organization for the Marijuana, for the legalization of marijuana. And at a few different conferences, he's passed that out. And I've gotten requests for that as a poster and stuff like
that's
that.
That's awesome.
And then also for a self-defense one, how to use your voice. That's one that I did for the LA Weekly. It's kind of cool. The LA Weekly was doing a feature on date rape, and it was around the Kobe Bryant case. Remember where he was accused of raping a young woman, and so they had a whole bunch of different articles about it, and they asked me to do a comic, some sort of how-to, and I decided that I wanted to kind of turn it around and make it something
empowering.
Precisely. Exactly. And, like, you know, you can't you really can't effectively teach punching and kicking on paper like that, on one page. So I decided to do how to use your voice and basically verbally setting boundaries and different verbal techniques that you can use. And there's an organization, women's self-defense organization here in Seattle called Home Alive. Home Alive, like get your ass home alive. And
they've been around for a while too, I think.
They have been
around.
They
did like a great compilation back in the 90s, I remember.
Yes. Yes. And it's an awesome, awesome organization. They're great. So they use that in their classes, some of them.
Excellent. Spreading the word.
Spreading the word.
Now, I'm going to say, we're about half past, so I thought I'd play a little track, give you a little a little breather break.
Great.
So I got the DTs up.
Yay!
Yay! any particular track you'd like to hear off the MySpace site? DTs.
Off the MySpace site? I don't know which ones are there.
April Holso, Mystified, Sweet Words, and Proud Man.
Oh, God, you know what? They're all really good. Mystified is off their new album, so why don't you go ahead with that one?
Okay. And just remind people, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are joined by Ellen Forney, and we'll be back in a sec. Song, didn't I? I pressed the button, but it played the different song. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. So that one was April Halesso. Also off of their new CD, Filthy Habits. And I love the DTs, and also, like I told you before, the lead singer, Diana Young, is, so she, her name is Di Young, which is awesome for a rocker, huh?
Is it Di Young Blanchard?
It is.
I gotta make the comic reference.
Right. Jim Blanchard. Who? Well, you know what? He's not doing a whole lot of comics anymore. Sometimes.
No. He has the, was it Bad Meat?
Bad Meat. He did Glam Warp.
And
he did,
Hate. He did
Trucker Fag.
He's In Denial, which is a very, heart-wrenching tale of two men finding love in each other.
I love that one. I have
the big ass on the cover.
I have a Trucker Fags in Denial condom here. they printed up condoms.
That's brilliant.
It's awesome.
So just so people know, Jim Blanchard and yourself will be at the comic convention on Saturday in Seattle.
Yes.
At M City.
Yes.
Which
as well as a host of other Fantagraphics artists.
Named
the only ones that I know.
Pete Bagg and Jim Woodring, I think.
Jim Woodring. I think, yeah. Jim Woodring and I are signing at the same time, actually.
I saw that, and I'll be coming by the table at that time.
Will
to
you?
Get
awesome.
Stuff signed.
Terrific. I've
got a little book of a real stuff, the little collection, getting everyone that I can that's been in it to sign it. So far, I've only got Seth Chester Brown and Joe Sacco, so I think it's a good start.
Yeah, it's a great start.
Well, you know, be sure to introduce yourself.
Oh, I will. I will.
No, I'm kidding.
There's some pictures floating about me online looking very odd at Times Square, so maybe you can see that.
Okay.
At our old website, I posted this picture that my friend and I took of ourselves when we were in New York in October, and it's a very horrible picture of us with the most horrible looks on our faces of, I don't know, glee and excitement, and they still haven't changed it at the old site. And they keep complaining about having to look at this picture of me. And
intriguing.
It's a good picture. It was good. I've never been to New York, and it was a trip of madness and good times. It would fit in one of your comics. We hung out with Jamie Gillis, former porn star from the 70s, and told us all sorts of stories while we were in the meatpacking district of some of the...
That sounds appropriate.
...history in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Including something about Linda Lovelace and some other stuff. Let's get back to your comics.
Okay.
So, not only comics, we also do art pieces too. You had the one thing at the, was it the Sex Expo? The Erotic Art Expo? I can't remember.
It's the Seattle Erotic Art Festival, known to those of us who have been doing it for 5 years as SEAF. it's a really fun place for me to kind of go for it with, you know, more paintings and different kinds of non-comic imagery, including really big things. That's one of the things that I've done for the past couple of years, really big. So this year I did 4-foot by 4-foot paintings. They're really bold, a lot like my smaller work, but large, sort of like big silver screens.
Yeah, they're really pop too. Like the sensibility of it, super pop art.
Yeah.
Like clean line, kind of solid areas of color.
It's got zing.
Yeah. I think it's a good time to mention your website, because that's where I saw the art.
Terrific. Yes, let's mention my website. So it's ellenforney.com. Should I spell that?
Why don't?
Spell that. What?
ellenforney.com.
And I usually say F as in Frank, because a lot of people think I'm saying S. Like S as in snake, because, like, you know, I figured out, like, it's like it's both just sort of like air into the speaker. S as in
and
Frank.
I will have the website linked with the podcast.
Oh,
that's
great. Yeah.
And so on my blog is where I do all of my updates of what I'm doing, and I throw up there, you know, like the paintings that I just did, and I also post my Lust Lab ad of the week every week there. So if that sounds intriguing,
if for those
where you can find them
outside of Seattle, want to check it out. I think actually we may get The Stranger up here. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. You can pick it up in certain elite locations.
Zulu.
Yeah. And they used to have it downtown at the book company, but I think they're gone now.
Yeah, they kind of mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah.
Our, one of the best bookstores in Vancouver a couple of years ago just overnight went bankrupt and closed doors, and it was quite a sad occasion.
Don't you hate that?
Yeah. It happens a lot. Yeah. And
I don't know. It was very odd the way it happened. Like, you know, some places go bankrupt and slowly close down and stuff, but this just kind of, you know, overnight, some kind of weird foreclosure thing. I don't know what the deal was.
Somebody put all their money into the lottery, and that was the end of that.
Pretty much, yeah. And it was also the prime locations, like, where the hub of, you know, glamour Vancouver is now, where you can go and dress up in your blonde wig and go to any trashy bar, that kind of scene. So I think they've kind of tried to change that area too, unfortunately. Mm. Losing a lot of Vancouver street culture. And speaking of, I don't know, city culture, segue, you've been doing speeches or I guess, I don't know, slideshows on the Seattle's erotic landmarks.
The slideshow. Wait, huh? You're want me to talk about Seattle's erotic landmarks?
Yes.
Yeah. Man.
That was my weird, horrible segue. It didn't work at all.
Seattle's erotic landmarks was, I think, the first full-page comic that I did for The Stranger. It was a couple of editors ago, and I pitched the idea of doing full-page comics. And didn't have a theme at that point. It turned out with the new editor, Dan Savage, we brainstormed, like, what a theme could be. And that's where the how-tos, that's how the how-tos came to be.
Wow.
But so before that, I was just sort of like, well, I'll do this, and then I'll do something on this blacksmith, and then I'll do something about going to the Seattle International Raceway. So it was like kind of all over the place. But mm-hmm. the first one that I did was one that I had in my head for a really long time that I'd really wanted to get down on paper.
Well, luckily with someone like Dan Savage, you have a little bit of a leeway, I guess.
Well, this was pre-Dan Savage editing.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Actually, I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, it's a really queer paper, but has a tendency to be queer on the end of, like, of the gay men. I mean, there's just more gay men in the writer positions. And
well, it's two different
Savage,
cultures.
Obviously, he's the editor, so... okay, so I'm sidestepping the erotic landmarks for the moment. But so sometimes people ask me where I get the ideas from, like where did I get the idea for the amputated finger, and where did I get the idea for the call girl and all that, you know, like how to be a successful call girl. And sometimes it comes from a theme, like I was just saying, date rape is a theme. Like, yeah. What am I going to do with that? Sometimes it's very, very specific, like David Schmader, The Stranger, specifically asked me to do, have you smoke pot and stay out of jail. But the one that I guess I'm not going to tell this entire story, but the one that I brought to the table was how to fuck a woman with your hands. Because I figured, you know, it was something that people needed to know.
So little kids, listener discretion be advised.
And I and all your sisters, thank you.
You know, I had, so the end of that was that, you know, like Dave and Dan were just kind of like, ugh, ewy, well, go ahead. If you really have to, your thing. But yeah, I had a woman come up to me at an art show once, and she said, I just want to let you know. Also, that's the one that I've seen the most on people's refrigerators, which is totally a position of honor. She came up to me and she said, I just want to let you know that comic that you did completely turned around the sex life for me.
Wow.
And wow. What kind of honor is that?
That really is gratifying. Like, what more can an artist ask for than to have such, like, a deep impact on somebody, like a positive impact like that?
Oh, I mean, yeah. Really? That's, like, amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's... Yeah.
Ellen... Oh, sorry. I wanted to ask you about... if it's, like, your love for adventure, seeking knowledge that, like, kind of prompted you to start doing the comics, or if the comics sort of spurred you to have, like, more adventure in your life, like, especially when I read about your walk with, what was her name, Carol? Or your date with Camille Paglia, like, what sort of came first?
I guess I'd have to say that they work hand in hand. It's my own natural tendency to be curious and open-minded and interested, I suppose. And comics give me a way to explore that and a way to relate to other people that way.
It's great because you can call up the lawyer and say you're working on a comic, and then they'll give you the time. Or do you know what I mean? Like, do you find that it opens doors for you that you wouldn't normally have opened?
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I remember too, and I mean, it opens some doors that don't really go anywhere, but it's a way to open. like for instance, I saw. I remember seeing a play. Oh, this was a while ago now, and it was this. It was a one-woman show, and it was just great. I just thought that it was really smart writing, and that she just seemed like a really interesting person. And I went and I introduced myself afterwards, and I said, you know, I'm a cartoonist, and maybe I don't know if it would ever work for us to collaborate on something, but maybe. And we talked about it for a while, and we got together a few times for coffee, and it actually didn't go anywhere, but I managed to have coffee with this really interesting woman a few times, you know, and then sometimes it really does go somewhere, like all those interviews that I did. And actually, that lawyer I'm still in touch with, and we have lunch every once in a while.
In case you ever need the services of a lawyer. But why would that happen?
Next question. Yeah,
there's a lot of really, well, I don't know if it's a question or more of a comment, but I really love your collaborations that you've done, like the stories, say the ones with Dan Savage where he's talking about his early sexual experiences, or... Oh, there's just so many good ones. I liked the one where the woman goes to see the scariest movie ever, and it's mm-hmm. really more scary because she realizes that it's the beginning of a lifetime of boyfriends telling her what to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I could relate to that one some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
well, I think the people that I've collaborated with, I think, are by and large really interesting, creative people who are great writers. I mean, I'm collaborating with writers, and I'm pretty choosy about it because who I collaborate with. I mean, as much as I can be choosy, because I like doing my own work, and so there has to be a reason for me to collaborate with somebody. And then it's always an interesting exercise because maybe they'll write about something that I wouldn't necessarily create on my own. And so I think that because it makes me stretch in other directions, maybe that comes across in the comics that I'm thinking, or you know, like that I'm maybe experimenting or kind of stretching myself in a different way than I would normally. I personally really loved doing the comics with David Schmader. The one who I had talked about before with the How to Smoke Pot and Stay Out of Jail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The series, What the Drugs Taught Me.
That was crazy.
Doing that was crazy because we did them for this. They were full pages for The Stranger. And for some reason, somebody decided, maybe, whatever, that we should do one a week for 5 weeks. And so it was kind of like running a marathon. And the thing is that I love Dave, and I love his writing, and I really wanted to do it well. And I really wanted to do a good collaboration with him. And so, like, he'd write it, and then we'd go over it, and I'd go over the thumbnails, and I'd do it, and I'd ink it, and I'd get it in. And then he'd write it, and then I'd do the thumbnails, and we'd go over it, and just, like, for 5 weeks, it was just this really, you know, it takes a while to do a full-page comic.
Yeah. It's like and when you're working on it that way, you're almost full-time partners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those are really awesome comics. Like, they kind of demystify the whole drug experience thing. Cause he's talking about using LSD and what were the other drugs that he tried?
Ecstasy.
Yeah. Which have just been, you know, because there's such a movement lately to try to get the whole truth about those kinds of, they're kind of softer than we're taught to believe when we're young, and like they've always been sort of like researched and used for like their psychological benefits. So it's great that you're coming out and doing that in a public forum.
You're talking about in Canada.
Yeah.
because this is, I mean, it's really, really hard to find anything here I don't know if I'd go so far as to say pro-drugs, but just, like, honest about drugs. And, you know, like, when they're fun or when they're, you know, like, in the What the Drugs Taught Me, you know, like, he had a bad trip in there, right? But it didn't like make him jump out a window and die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you know, and I mean also in I Love Led Zeppelin there's How to Kick. I mean, there's like how to get yourself off heroin, and it's certainly not pleasant, and you can tell. I mean, you're gonna puke and you're gonna have diarrhea and like it shakes and you're gonna think you're gonna die. But I mean, like, to be realistic about it, I think is important. How to talk about drugs with your kid, and I'm getting off. Where are we starting out? Oh, being honest about drugs. Yeah.
Do you ever worry about backlash from publishing comics like that?
Backlash.
Like political backlash, or you know, those kinds of things.
I haven't really run into a whole lot. There's been, for the most part, my stuff is soft enough that it doesn't cause a whole lot of controversy. I guess, you know, like when How to Fuck a Woman with Your Hands ran in the LA Weekly, I guess some people, I mean, like, they got a lot of calls and letters and a couple advertisers pulled their ads.
Probably got some
and
new
that
advertisers
was, like, thrilling
too.
Thrilling for me, and it was yeah. Thrilling for the art director and the editor. They loved it. They loved it. I mean, like it you know, it was published in the Stranger without a peep. Like it went over. I mean, there have been things here and there. I mean, the main thing, I guess, that's kind of a consideration with doing my adult work and my more edgy. It's so funny. It's my edgy work. It's my counterculture work. is because I do more mainstream things too, and I do some work for kids. I do a bunch of, I mean, I do, you know, like illustrations and comics for kids, and there's just, you know, like this little bit of I don't know if I would go so far as to call it backlash, but it's definitely kind of like a consideration that has me, you know, like I would put my, you know, just sort of knit my brow maybe a bit. And, you know, and there's some really simple, and here again, I wouldn't call this backlash, but some really simple things like, one of my little cartoonist friends. He's, I guess,
the leprechauns of cartoons.
And he lives in Florida, and he wrote to me, and he's a great cartoonist. He's like this awesome, and he loved Monkey Food. And apparently, like according to his mom, he read it all the time, over and over. And my niece and nephew, who are now, but 8 and 12. Loved my, and they, I mean, they can't read I Love Led Zeppelin. They're not going to be able to read Lust, you know. It's not that I want to make my stuff G rated. It's just a consideration, you know what I mean? It's an issue that comes into play. A lot of where my creativity comes from, and a lot of where I want my a lot of the things that I want to and try to express are I guess for mature audiences. But it's something that I kind of go about. Maybe not a whole lot more than but
things that make you go hmm.
It's a thing that makes me go hmm. It is exactly what
it's Let's hope that's not the song that plays in your car wreck that ends your life.
Right.
Oh.
You know that. Okay. All right. So that. Do you want to say what that's? Do you want me to say what that's a reference to?
Sure. Yeah. I'll mention the strip. Yeah. Go ahead. Describe it and the reason we played Led Zeppelin at the beginning.
And I think where the name of the book might have come from.
Yeah.
Aha.
Whole bunch of segues there.
You know, somebody didn't pick up on that in the beginning. One of the first reviewers for I Love Led Zeppelin. They were like, that I called it that for no reason. No, it's in there. It's
didn't
in there,
read
man.
It. It's one of those
not
reviews.
Only that, but there are a lot of little Led Zeppelin references throughout. Like there are a few different like little characters that pop up here and there that have Led Zepp T-shirts on. There's a little thing to look for.
I have a feeling it's probably the type of reviews where they read like the first 10 pages, like, okay,
yeah,
write something for that. Unfortunately, it happens.
But that's one of the first ones. Well, anyway, so it's called The Final Soundtrack, and it's about dying in a car wreck. Like, what if you die in a car wreck? And it's kind of fantasizing about, you know, like the sort of like the drama and the melodrama of that, and you're thrown from the car, and it's sort of like this film noir idea of, and that if you were listening to, you know, the radio, and the radio is still playing, it kind of gives this soundtrack over your death scene, and for me, it was Dazed and Confused that kind of completed that scene for me. It goes on, you know. But what if I'm not listening? I can quote it because actually I perform this. What if I'm not listening to some hefty Led Zeppelin tune at the moment of impact? What if I'm listening to something stupid, like one of those embarrassing songs I'd never own, but sometimes alone really enjoy on the radio? And the ones that I chose for me, the two in particular were Sheryl Crow. Leaving Las Vegas.
Oh.
And but the one that has actually given, because of doing that comic, has given me license to listen to this really loud in my car, even though it's a bad song, it makes me smile now, is Don Henley. Boys of Summer. You know, it's funny, I do this performance to promote I Love Led Zeppelin. It's kind of this, it's like animation and audio, and I narrate in front of it. It's really fun to do. It's gone over really well. I've done it here in Seattle a number of times, and in New York and in San Francisco. And the guy, my friend Matt Rodriguez with PlexiPixel.com, he did the animation for me, and he told me that he never, ever wants to hear Boys of Summer. Because, you know, you have to sit there and listen to it and sync all up and everything. Oh, my God. Yeah. I was apologetic. But, you know, what are you going to do?
No good deed goes unpunished.
And that comic actually came from a real situation. I mean, I had a really super long day, and I got into my, you know, doing errands, but it was a beautiful day, but it was like just really hassled, and I got into my car. I love my car, and it's a muscle car. It's a 68 Cougar. Got into my car, and I'm like, and this is when I'm like intensely into my like Led Zeppelin phase, and because I didn't get into Zeppelin until I was in my early 30s when I got my car. It's true.
It's driving music.
It went by me in high school, and so I was like the 14-year-old that everyone else was at 14, but that was me at whatever 32. So I listened to Zeppelin really loud in my car, and so I took off, and I'm like in, you know, South Seattle, where, you know, like there are these like long stretches of road in the industrial district, and I was, you know, like in the car, and it's Zeppelin really, you know, loud, and I'm like taking the curves and accelerating to the curves, and I'm like, you know, and I'm all macho and whatnot, and then I had this moment where I was just. You know, you have this sense of peace. You know, it's almost like I'm gonna, you know, like I feel like I could beat up anyone right now. You know, but you have this sense of like of peace about it, and that's when I thought, you know, like if I died right now, that'd be all right. You know, like right now, everything is just fucking perfect. And then I thought, you know, like. That is so hilarious. And part of it was because, I mean, I was listening to Zeppelin really loud, right? And like, it kind of picture, like, and really, like, picturing me, like, just, like, crashing into something and, you know, like, it's the Zeppelin and the drama of it all and whatever. So that's where that comment came from.
Well, we're happy you arrived home safely.
And that it inspired you to draw this comic.
It did.
Unfortunately, we're nearing the end of our allotted hour here at CITR. I just a quick question. I we probably won't even have enough time to get a real answer, but I haven't really brought it up very much. But you're one of the cartoons that really responded to the fact that I'm doing a month focused on female cartooning in kind of recognition of March 8th, your birthday. Happy belated birthday! Being International Women's Day, and the day after my birthday.
Yes.
International Women's Day being my hangover day. Somehow doesn't work well with my girlfriend.
That's funny.
But yes. Feminism in comics.
Ooh. Is it,
I'm just throwing this out there.
You in the last 60 30 seconds.
Well, you know what? The other guys are always late, and I haven't seen them walk by yet, so I'm going to try and talk about this a little bit. Do you see it? It's something that could be, because I would say you're a feminist cartoonist. I don't know, like, maybe I'm making a statement that you don't like, but for me, as
no,
far
no,
as female cartoonists...
I would totally consider myself a feminist.
Like yourself, yeah. And like Roberta, and sure. I guess the lady across the table from me, Robin, as well.
I always own it, you know?
do you see that as something that's lacking in modern women doing comics, being not really taking on that stance, that, I guess, pride?
I think there's a really big argument about women calling ourselves, like, specifically using the word feminist or not. It's like this big, it's kind of a, okay, in a way, it's semantics. So, like, it's a word, and, you know, like, what you do and how you act and what you say is more, and how you vote and whatever is more important than whether you actually call yourself a feminist or not. And, you know, at the same time, I know that words are very powerful, and so... like, personally, I think, I mean, it's really important for me to be like, yes, I'm a feminist. And you know, like, if somebody who is acting like a feminist and I think is a feminist doesn't want to be called a feminist for whatever reason, I'll just kind of roll my eyes, right? But I think, and a lot of people use the term post-feminist for like, younger women who have that sensibility. I think that having grown up with feminism sort of like in the general culture so strongly that I think that younger women don't need to identify specifically so strongly as feminist. Just like writing, having the luxury of what our feminist mothers wanted to give us, which was to be able to take those kinds of rights for granted, and at the same time, you know, they're, they, like, we shouldn't take them for granted. but we're supposed to take them for granted, but we shouldn't. You see where I'm at? It's kind of a...
It's a bit of a paradox.
It's a conundrum. Yeah. So, did you want me to relate that to comics specifically?
You know what? We probably don't even have time to...
Okay.
Well, are they coming? Do you see them? I don't see them. Let's continue. They can wait a couple minutes. They're late. They come to the door.
Here, I could just make this sort of blanket image of, like, me being like, feminism in comics, and, like, throwing a big handful of confetti into the air. Yay!
A little bucket of confetti. What's the guy that did that? Rip Taylor?
Oh.
Sorry.
He said feminism in comics.
the guy that would throw buckets of confetti. Never mind.
Well, do you know, I think... A friend of mine who's not that familiar with comics went and saw Art Spiegelman when he was here speaking at Benaroya Hall, which is this huge. It's like where the orchestra plays, and it's amazing that there's a writers and a series of writers. Anyway, he was there, and I wasn't able to make it. I was out of town, unfortunately. My God. But she said, God, I can't believe how male-dominated, the field is. I can't believe you never, told me how male-dominated the field is. And I was just kind of like, well, I guess I've kind of gotten used to that, in a way. And I had a really long talk about this with Megan Kelso a few years ago when she was putting together a women's comics anthology.
The Shahrezde?
Scheherazade.
I always mispronounce it, and I'll never get it right.
Yeah, I mean, that was one thing. It's a very long word with a Z right in the middle of it, and all these syllables. About whether it makes sense to even have a women's anthology, because here we want to be included with everybody else. We're kind of marginalizing ourselves, and at the same time, we want to make our voices heard. And there is a distinction between the sensibility of women artists, I guess, and men artists, and that is a big generalization that I just said. And there's a whole gray area in the middle, but in general, there's kind of different. You get a different sense. So, I think that's. Another issue that comes into play with being a woman cartoonist and kind of trying to navigate when I for me when I want to be just a cartoonist, I'm just a cartoonist, or when I want to be a woman cartoonist specifically. And it is definitely something that I look for, when I look in anthologies, and most anthologies of comics, count the women in there, and there's only a handful.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it's self-perpetuating because there aren't as many women in the field.
It's still a boys' club.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a boys' club, so there aren't that many women. There aren't that many women because it's a boys' club. But I'll tell you, in my classes that I'm teaching, they're about half and half young women and young men. So, and I think that they're... My impression is that there are more and more girls and women getting into the field. So I think that's an interesting trend well needed.
I'll second that seeing the difference in people in emerging local cartoons in Vancouver. There's quite a contingent of young ladies popping out of the local schools.
The wheels of progress turn slowly.
On that note, the other boys have finally shown up. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us and discussing comics and Led Zeppelin and more.
Thanks for inviting me, and it was a pleasure talking with you. And I'll look forward to meeting you in a couple of days.
Yes, and I'll be getting really drunk at the Fantagraphics party, probably.
Awesome!
It's near the end of the semester at school. So
I'll see you then.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
That was Ellen Forney, and that was awesome. She's so great. I love Led Zeppelin by Fantagraphics. Up next, Crimes and Treasons. They're standing in the hallway. Next week, I will be joined by El Columbia. I don't think he's ever done another interview. I can't find any. I've been looking. El Columbia is an incredibly talented artist. Check out his website, www.elcolumbia.com, or Google him, and you will find all sorts of crazy stuff. He is incredibly talented. And I'm going to end off with Wilson Pickett. What's the name of the song? Don't Let the Green Grass Fool You. I hope everyone's having a good day. It's, Say bye, Robin.
Oh, bye, Robin.
There we go. Yay.